So are you living in Carson County? My ward. But don't call me if you have any problems. Yeah, well, I guess I'll speed dial. But very nice to meet you. So.
Good afternoon. It's just about 12 o'clock, which is shortly after 12 o'clock on Wednesday, November 10th. This is a meeting of the Carson City Board of Supervisors. It's a special meeting to canvass the vote. We are in the Community Center Sierra Room in Carson City. Could we please have a roll call?
Supervisor Williamson, Supervisor Aldean, Supervisor Wald,
here.
Mayor Kroll.
Here.
You have a quorum present, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Could we have our newest district deputy district attorney, Tina, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Thank you, Tina. And for the public, that was Tina Rossum, who is the new deputy district attorney in Carson City, leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance today.
You want to do the invocation, too?
Do the invocation. Boy, I could.
Poor Tina.
Do I do that?
Put her through her
paces. Yeah, do the. Boy, I'm goofing up here lately, man.
A multidimensional job.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose her.
All right. All right. Everybody had a chance to look at the agenda? Any changes to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll assume the agenda is adopted as it's published and on the amended version. Now we're on item number 5, public comments and discussion. This is the time for anybody, any member of the public to talk about anything that you want to bring to our attention, if it's on the agenda or not. If it's on the agenda, you might want to keep your comments until the agenda item comes up, because it makes it a little easier for us to keep a record and to put everything in context. But anybody want to say anything? Hearing none, we'll now move to item number 6, clerk recorder. We're going to do the canvassing. You know, Alan, this is one of the more important functions that government does kind of have an empty room here. But why don't you tell us what we're doing here and why it's important. And by the way, maybe we should just open up and say congratulations to you and your department for a wonderful job.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, for the record, Alan Glover, the Carson City Clerk Recorder. We are here to canvass the vote of the general election of 2010, which is a statutory requirement of the Board of Supervisors to do so. Before we get into the canvass, I'd like to take an opportunity to thank my staff for the great work that they did. Sue Merriweather, who is the chief election clerk for the city, Sylvia Yashimoto, Elizabeth Phelps, and then our part-time people that really put in a lot of work and a lot of hours, Carla Masterson, Jane Dielich, and Carol Wells. And they really stuck with us all during the election and on election day and handled the phone calls. Parks was really super to work with. Kenny Fraser did a great job helping us set up and supervise the crew that did that. And Larry Nair did all the electrical drops for us right on time. Mitch Ames here was super great to work with. We had a really good people working election day. Carson's really fortunate to have the people in this community that will work on election day. That is the number one problem in the United States, is to get competent help on election day. And we can draw on some very talented people in this community, and we're really lucky to have them. And again, the crew that worked early voting, you know, that's very hectic. We were really cranking them out all during early voting. And with that, Mr. Mayor, I would like to tell you that there were 19,569 votes cast in this election. On election day, we had 7,186. Early voting, we had 10,771. We had 1,612 absentee ballots that were returned to us. I was somewhat disappointed. This was the first year that we had the MOVE Act, the Military and Overseas Voting Act, in which people living outside the United States could vote electronically. And I think we had 50 people applied for a ballot in that manner, but I think only about 35 of them returned their ballot. And so we're going to run some statistics and report back to the Veterans Administration in Washington to see if this turned out to be a better way to vote. But it was really a great way. And we could email them back and forth. If we didn't get their ballot, we'd remind them, hey, you have till Tuesday at 7 to get your ballot back in. And some of them wrote or emailed back and says, oh, yeah, I'll do that. Good way to vote. It went very well. Other than that, we had a 79.11% turnout. That is about 2% higher than the off-year election 4 years ago, but is down, obviously, from the presidential year, which was 92%. There are a very definite group of people that only vote in presidential elections and only vote for president. They forget about supervisors and school board members and so forth. And with that, Mr. Mayor, two other things. You have two motions before you. One is to canvass the vote for the general election. And technically, we've had two elections. We had a school bond election. And so you need to canvass that vote so that they can go ahead and get their bonds sold and handle that. I probably should read into the record that question CC2, the school bond election, got 10,430 votes, 8,099 were the no votes, yes getting 56.29% of the vote, therefore it passed, and now the school district can go ahead and issue bonds.
Thank you, Alan. Supervisor Aldean has a question. Let me just ask a question before go to Supervisor Aldean. Were there any issues that we need to be made aware of that might affect the vote total or the tally?
No, there is not.
No. Okay. On the sheet, I know I asked you this last year. There's a category for fleeing voters. What is a fleeing voter besides me?
A fleeing voter is someone who comes in and signs the roster poll book, yet fails to cast a ballot. And
why would somebody do that?
I was telling the city manager, we had a very good example of that. I believe it was in the primary. A lady came in several days after the election and brought her blue activation card back into us. She took a call and wanted to go back to the office, intended to come back and vote later, and never did. But she wanted to return the card. What she didn't realize is that activation card that you're given when you go in to vote only lasts about 10 minutes, and then it goes blank on you. So she couldn't have voted if she would have come back in. We're going to look into this a little closer. We had more fleeing voters in early voting than we did on election day. No, we didn't. We had 11 fleeing voters. I'm sorry. 5 fleeing voters on election day, 11 fleeing voters during early voting. But again, it was a 2-week period in there. Sometimes they simply do not cast their ballot. Is it a problem that they have activating the machine and get confused and get embarrassed and leave, or is there some other problem? We have monitors in the hall that try and watch for those people. But that's a number that I feel is a little too high. We should not have had that many. We were watching them pretty close, but it's fairly common all around the state, and I would assume around the country. When we were on punch cards, we did have people who would put their ballot in their pocket and take it home with them, and we were always short. But we didn't. In those days, you had to reach in and pull a ballot out if you had more ballots and signatures, or the other way around. And now we simply report that because we have no way to reconcile the numbers any other way. The other thing you'll see is missing signatures, and that's you get busy talking and they forget to ask the voter to sign the roster poll book. We knew both in early voting and on election day, these people truly did simply miss getting the signatures. The poll workers told us notes. I did not get the signature, and frankly, I think they knew who some of the people were in there. That's a human error. Has always occurred. It's unfortunate. And again, in the old days, we had had to pull a ballot for them and disenfranchise somebody. We no longer have to do that. We simply report to you that we missed that many signatures. But we do know that they actually voted, and we did balance out between the number of signatures and then you add in missing signatures in the number of ballots cast.
Alan, do you think it would be useful? I know that when we made the conversion to this new voting system, I think you had, there was an opportunity for people to come in, familiarize themselves with the system and the new machines. But I'm wondering if we need to do that periodically, not only for the elderly, but for new voters, new young people who have never voted before, who may be a little intimidated, you know, by the new system.
I think that might be a really good idea to do, because you simply, after you get a new system, you just assume everybody's caught on to it, but you have a whole group of new voters coming in. Either they have simply, they've moved to Carson City from out of state, or brand new first-time voters. Most of those young people voting are pretty good, however. I got to say, it doesn't intimidate them at all. And I must say, there's a lot of older voters that are not intimidated by the card either. You simply point out it's just like a player's card, and they know exactly how to stick that into that voting machine. It's more people I've noticed, just anecdotally, that's people in their, like, 40s and 50s that are, you know, some of us are caught in the transition here. I think we might want to put a class on, or at least make them available for more training in that, because that's really, we shouldn't have that number. It should be one or two maybe, but we've got to watch that. It's an area for improvement that we've marked on our calendar.
Any other comments or questions? Alan, what was the percentage turnout in Carson City was, again, what was it?
Was 79.11.
And how do you know, how does that compare, if you know, to the rest of the
county? I have not checked the other counties, but I would assume that Douglas beat us and Eureka beat us. They always do. But I'll have to go back and look at those. Some of the rural counties do get some really good turnouts, but Carson does well for an urban area because we're the capital, and people do pay attention to it.
Members,
I think it was
probably. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, high for them.
Mm-hmm. Members of the public desire to weigh in on this issue? Anybody? Apparently, Alan, that you've done another wonderful job, because there's nobody here to say, you know, part of the resolution that we're going to pass is that the election was hereby and is declared to have been validly conducted in accordance with the law. No problems. Nobody's here. That testifies as a testament to the good work that you've done and always do. I mean, it seems in Carson City we always are blessed with having no unusual problems, and we get a good high turnout, and that's what democracy is
good
all about.
Support
so
from this
thanks to you and all your staff
manager.
For doing everything.
And that's why Alan keeps running unopposed.
All right. Hearing nobody from the audience wants to weigh in, is there a resolution number on this one?
Resolution number, first one is 56.
You want to do it?
Mr. Mayor, I move to adopt resolution number 2010-R56, approving the canvass of the vote for the 2010 general election as presented by the clerk recorder.
Is there
second?
Motion second by Supervisor Wald. Discussion, hearing none, all in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. We're now on item number 6B. We've heard that one. Do you want to see mine? Any members of the public desire to weigh in on the issue with respect to the school bond election? Members of the board, hearing none, a motion is in order to approve the canvass of the vote on the special vote for the school bond.
And it's resolution 57.
You want to do this, Supervisor Wald? Supervisor Wald.
See, I move to approve. Resolution number 2010-R57, a resolution designated by the short title 2010 Carson City School District Canvas Resolution declaring the results of an election held within Carson City School District in Carson City in the state of Nevada on the general obligation school bond. Questions submitted at the election held on Tuesday, November 2nd, 2010 to the qualified electors of the district, providing other matters related thereto and providing the effective date hereof.
Motion seconded. Is that sufficient? We okay with that? Okay. All hearing no discussion, all in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Anything else to come before the board? Let me just, and it's not on the agenda here, I'll just mention publicly here, we will be having a couple of seats open for appointment in January for the Carson Subconservancy District. So people should, we'll be making those appointments in January. I mention that because I think, you know, if anybody's interested in that, they should, one, do some due diligence to find out if that's something they're interested to do, or maybe take a spin through the website or talk to now Assemblyman Livermore or Supervisor Williamson about whether, you know, what's involved with that. But just start thinking about those things. Okay? All right. There's nothing else to come before us. You want to move to adjourn?
So moved.
Seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Carried. We're done. Thank you.
Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization Commission meeting. The CAMPO organization is pleased to make reasonable accommodation for members of the public who are disabled and wish to attend this meeting. If special arrangements for the meeting are necessary, please notify CAMPO staff in writing at 3505 Butt Highway, Carson City, Nevada, 89701, or ppittinger@carson.org, or call Patrick Pittinger at 887-2355 as soon as possible. Requests are required prior to 12 noon on 2 days prior to the meeting. For more information regarding any of the items listed on the agenda, please contact the MPO staff at 887-2355. Additionally, the agenda with all supporting material is posted on the CAMPO website at www.carsonareampo.com. Kathy, can we have the roll call and determination of quorum, please?
Chairperson Mallory?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Eswine?
Here.
Member Aldean?
Here.
Member Carpenter? Member Kroll?
Here.
Member Destardins?
Here.
Member Fultz?
Here.
And Member Taylor?
Here.
Quorum is present.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Carpenter, Member Carpenter did contact me, and his absence is excused.
Thank you. Let's go to item B, approval of minutes. Any of the minutes give any of our members anything to discuss?
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the minutes from the meeting of October 13th, 2010, as presented.
Any other comment from any other members of the minutes? Second. We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Modification of agenda. Patrick?
None.
Thank you. Public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the MPO may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the MPO. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chair to calendar the matter for a future MPO meeting. No action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item of the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda and as an item which action may be taken. Are there any comments from the members of the public? Dan? No? Seeing none, we'll move on to E, disclosures. Any member of the MPO that may wish to explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the MPO? Seeing none, let's move on to item F. We have two items here. Both are action items. F1, and I believe, Dan, this is you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you noted, this is an action item. Staff is proposing to amend the Transportation Improvement Program. If you recall, we brought this as an information item last meeting, and really the only kind of change there is we've added a section highlighting some bicycle and pedestrian improvements. And again, the reasoning behind this was basically to have a more transparent and kind of accountable look at CAMPO's activities and programs.
Thank you, Dan. Any member comments? Dennis, do you have any comments on this? No?
Not, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody else? Are we ready for a motion?
Public comments?
Dan? Dan? Ready for a motion?
I move to approve an amendment to the CAMPO fiscal year 2011-2014 Transportation Improvement Program.
Second.
No fiscal impact.
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any comments from the members? Any comments from anybody in the audience? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item F2, and I believe this is you, Patrick.
Yes, sir. before you is the Unified Planning Work Program amendment that was presented for informational purposes last meeting and subject to a comment period as required. A public meeting was held and no comments were made that requested changes to this. The only thing of significance I can indicate is that both NDOT staff and Mr. Taylor's division, I guess it is, a division, and also Federal Highway Administration staff have had a chance to review and confirm the pending approval of this after we submit it to them for review. I will note that two of the four line items that are being increased are scheduled to have contracts awarded at an RTC meeting following this meeting. Items... There it is, 3.3 and item 2.1. So those contracts will be executed here later this evening. And finally, I'll note that the second page of the action form shows the contribution that was previously approved, and what you have before you is actually the adjustment up to cover this amendment, but an adjustment down to show a credit for the carryover funds from the previous year. So the result is that the Carson City and Douglas County portions, the net is that they have been decreased, and per the agreement previously with Lyon County, they have been held harmless and are maintained at $5,000 just for this year. And following the approval of this, staff will be able to send out invoices to the three member agencies.
Thank you, Patrick. Member Desjardins.
Patrick, good job in finding that money or however it got to us. That leads into, is there a possibility that we will be getting additional funds later on? Do you have kind of a feel for that?
Well, I'll let Mr. Taylor chime in on that.
Thank you, Patrick, Mr. Chairman, and Commissioner Desjardins. I seriously doubt that happening. We are currently operating under a continuing resolution till December 31st. It is uncertain where we go from there, if it's going to be a month-long, two-month-long, six-month-long extension, a year-long. We don't know. So in light of having no pending legislation that I'm aware of that calls for a multi-year transportation bill, it is very doubtful. And as a matter of fact, this money here, as you recall, actually was given back to you after the two rescissions we had last year.
Thank you, Member Taylor. Any other member comments? Any comments from anybody in the audience? Are we ready for a motion to approve this?
I'll make the motion. I move to approve an amendment to the Campo Fiscal Year 2011 Unified Planning Work Program. Fiscal impact, we actually have a gain of $110,000.
Second.
Any member comments on the motion? Any comments from anybody in the audience on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Our next item of business is future agenda items. Patrick?
We have several irons in the fire, and we'll see what comes out hot before then.
Thank you. Is there a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second? Did anybody have a second?
World record.
The RTC meeting will start in 5 minutes in this same place.
You just motion. Raised the bar.
Meeting adjourned.
that I know. I'll be right back.
Let's go ahead and call this meeting of the Regional Transportation Committee to order. The date is Wednesday, November 10th, 2010. We're here in the Sierra Room at the Community Center. Kathy, could you please call the roll to determine a quorum?
Chairperson Aldean.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Carpenter. Commissioner Kroll.
Here.
Commissioner Desjardins.
Here.
Commissioner Nowey.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Moving on to the next item, approval of minutes. We have one set of minutes dated October 13th, 2010 on our packets for approval. Does anyone have any suggested corrections, additions? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve as presented.
I move to approve as presented.
Second.
Any comments from members of the audience? Seeing none. Oh, yes. Dee Dee?
Hi.
Good morning.
I'm Dee Dee Foremaster. I'm from the Rural Center for Independent Living and do drop in. I'm here basically today to let you know how I feel about the situation that's occurred with the little yellow cards and the disabled population and the bus system. If you're at a loss, so were we.
Didi, does this relate to the approval of the minutes from last month's
no.
meeting? Okay. Can I just bear
Go
with
ahead.
Us? Let's approve the minutes, and then we'll move to public comment.
Okay. Okay.
So we have a motion, and we have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. We'll get to you in just a second. We have a few more miscellaneous items to dispense with. Are there any modifications to the agenda, Patrick?
Yes, actually one. Item F6, staff would like to continue that, to withdraw from this meeting, continue to the next meeting because the primary staff person for that could not attend today.
Okay. So F6 is continued until a December meeting. Do you think you'll be prepared to bring it back in December?
Yes, well, prepared okay. now. I'm just hoping he can make it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Moving on to the next item, public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the commission may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the commission. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, you can approach me after the meeting and we'll make arrangements to have it officially agendized. Now, I'm opening it up for public comment. Dee Dee, continue. If you could go ahead and re-identify yourself for the record, that would be great.
I'm Dee Dee Foremaster. I'm with the Rural Center for Independent Living and to drop in. I'm here to comment on the fact that on October 1st, there was a change in the transportation system that requires people with disabilities to have a little yellow card or their Medicaid card or Medicare card to be able to access the disabled passes, which I know under ADA it states that you can do that, and I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is the fact that none of us in the disabled community were informed of the change. Not one. So when October 1st came, I received a flood of phone calls, as well as people coming into my center who had been embarrassed half to death on the bus because they had no idea what the little yellow card was. and I had no idea either. So I made a couple of phone calls, found out that in order to get a disability pass now, you had to have a little yellow card or a Medicare or a Medicaid card. Well, the problem with this whole thing was this. Most of us here in this room drive cars. So say on October 1st, if you got into your car and you went to start it and it wouldn't start, and then this thing popped up on your dashboard that said, please insert little yellow card. Well, you don't have a little yellow card, and you're totally confused. And you don't know what to do or how to find the little yellow card. So you get out of your car, you make a few phone calls, you find out that the little yellow card is over on Buddeye Way. Well, the problem is you can't drive your car over to get the little yellow card to make your car work. So how are you supposed to get the little yellow card? And say that on top of it, you were disabled. And you couldn't walk to the office to get the little yellow card. Well, that's the problem that we have. We have a situation where the transportation system has been altered for people with disabilities, and no one was informed. Not one of us. Would have probably taken 10 seconds to have gotten on the CAMPO website, pushed the button, and sent out an email stating that things were changing. These are the changes that were going to occur. That didn't happen. I had no idea about the little yellow card. So I have a bunch of people in my office who cannot access the little yellow card. So in the few phone calls that I made, I found out that the closest bus stop was two blocks away from the Buddeye Way office. So people couldn't get the little yellow card who were severely disabled because they couldn't walk the two blocks. And I happen to know also that the door-to-door service is so booked up that I have people calling 2 weeks in advance with doctor's appointments and still can't get in. So my concern is there has been very poor communication. When I called to find out information, people were very rude and disrespectful to me. The only one who was the least bit helpful is Lisa. Lisa has been wonderful and who has been willing to work with us and everything else, which I think is wonderful. I mean, she's a wonderful person to have wanted to do that. But the higher-ups, I did not find that. I also want you to know that there's several of my people who still, right now, do not have little yellow cards and do not have the Medicare card because some of us are disabled and do not collect Social Security. So, consequently, and they can't get to the office. So, consequently, we have a real predicament here. I sent a letter and asked that they please delay this decision for 60 to 90 days. I think that's reasonable because people with disabilities are probably half the ridership of the bus. Now, I'm not sure what the exact statistics are, but I'm willing to bet that most of the people who ride the bus have some kind of disability or are low income. And so I just think that it's rude, it's disrespectful, and when I called, I was informed that I really wasn't that important in this community and that I really thought it was a lot more important than I was. So I'm here to say the disability community is infuriated. They feel like they have been ignored, disrespected, and basically, after I called, not only that, but the transportation system basically thumbed their nose at us. So are we upset? Yes, we are. And I realize that I am the only one up here speaking, But I want to tell you that the phone calls that I got were unbelievable. And people are upset, very upset. So I think there's a few people behind me who wish to stand up and say something about it, as a matter of fact. I do want to commend the commission for extending the bus routes. That was something that vitally needed to be done. And I want you to know how much I appreciate that you took the time to take a look at that and correct the situation, because now more people with disabilities can access the bus, but now they can't because of the little yellow card. So I'm going to let the people behind me speak. Thank you very much.
Diddy, let me just clarify something for the record. I mean, as a protocol, you don't object to the issuance of these cards. Your objection was to the alleged lack of notice and the fact that there was no convenient way for people who were handicapped and eligible for those cards to access them. Is that
fair? Which is against ADA.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you, Dee. Anyone else wishing to testify under public comment? Okay. All right, Dan. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jen Landman, and I am a person with a disability, but my doctor is far out of state, and I'm not able to contact her right now. I'm not able to get a little yellow card to identify myself as a person with a disability, and so consequently, I did not buy my usual monthly bus pass that I would buy during the month of October. I walked everywhere. And I was walking in the dark. I don't think that's safe through the neighborhoods that I was going through. And so I finally broke down and bought a November pass. But because I don't have that special little yellow card, I had to buy an adult pass, which is a financial hindrance. So that's testimony of one citizen. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Dan, I'm sorry, Dan, and you just need to be more aggressive and leap for that microphone.
That's okay. I wanted that topic to get finished with. My name is Dan Allison, and tonight I'm wearing my muscle-powered hat. When the agenda came out, I noticed that there was an agenda item about the micropaving contract and said to Patrick, I'd like to comment on that because I have concerns about it. And he said what I had a concern about was not related to that contract, that it was actually a state contract. The work that was done on 5th Street last year between Roop Street and Stewart Street, but especially between Salomon and Stewart Street, but particularly between Roop and Stewart Street, that section right there opposite the old facility and the State Department of Education. That piece of roadway was repaved. I don't know if micropaving is the correct term, but it was done last year, and it was done horribly. It resulted in windrows of loose material in the bike lane, and then they came back and did it again, and they didn't do it right the second time either. And the current situation is that the pavement in the bike lane is very lumpy. It's lumpy, bumpy like that, and it was not paved correctly. Some places it goes out to the gutter pan. Some places it doesn't go out to the gutter pan. It was never smoothed. So I realize it's a state project now, not a city project. So I was glad of that. But my concern now is that the city at some point is going to accept 5th Street, and it's in deteriorated condition. And I'm concerned that the city is going to take responsibility for something that needs to be fixed when the state didn't do it right to begin with. So I just wanted to express that concern that I have.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. I'll take that under advisement. Jeff?
Jeff Moser from Muscle Powered. I'll start off by saying thank you very much for bike lanes on Roof Street. I ride them every day, and it's fantastic. And even though you can't ride the whole thing yet, you get a feel for how it's going to feel when it's completed. And I think there's plenty of room for everybody. We did have one concern, though. Just south of the bus stop, southbound, the bike lane goes from 32 inches down to just 14 inches. Oh, I'm sorry, 17 inches, and which is, you know, pretty narrow. So, and then right in the middle of it, there's about an inch difference between the blacktop and the gutter. So, you know, that could catch someone's front tire, or if somebody was towing a bike trailer with kids in the back, that doesn't give you enough room to see through that little spot there. So we just wanted to make sure, see if that was a design thing that could be fixed or if that was part of the original plan.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Yeah. I see Patrick taking feverish notes over there. So, or Jeff, this is not the time to address it, but staff has taken note. Yeah, appreciate your comments.
Northbound is right after the bus stop's fine, so it maintains its width all the way down.
Okay, south of that point. Okay, yeah. Jeff, thank you very much. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Patrick, maybe it would be appropriate in light of some of the testimony we received here this evening to review our protocols with respect to notification, advance notification, when we change our policy having to do with the JAC service. So that would be my request, that we review those protocols and make sure that we're adhering to them. All right. Let's move. Yes, did you have a copy or a comment?
No, I just wanted to make a comment, and I appreciate all of those comments that were made. And please make sure that we follow up on and there were a number of things, I think, that are extremely important. The young lady that mentioned about the out-of-state doctor, those are always problems. And somehow we need to, I think, get a better handle on how to handle that situation. So hopefully we'll all work together and solve this for the good of the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Desjardins. Any other comment? Yes, Jim?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to respond to Dee Dee as well. I appreciate you coming here. I appreciate you sharing that. We need to hear the heartbeat of the community and the bus riders. And many transit systems, when they change over to a new system 30 or more days in advance, that's well noticed on the bus. And the bus driver would even tell people, you know, starting such and such a day, you're going to need a different kind of a pass. So the drop dead date is always led by giving the typical regular riders an opportunity to get into position for what they're going to need for that day. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Any other comments by members of the commission? Technically, you're not members of the public, but that's okay. That's a good discussion. Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item since we've closed public comment. Item E, disclosures. Does any member of the commission wish to disclose any contact with the public regarding any item on this evening's agenda? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to public meeting items, F1. Kim.
Kim Bell, Carson City Public Works. This item is, staff is asking the commission to approve the agreement with Ottoman Investments, LLC, a Nevada limited liability company, and Carson City for the granting of real property necessary to construct roadway improvements for the widening of Roop Street, and the fiscal impact is $4,200.
Question for you. The project is nearly completed. What were these difficult negotiations? Is that why it's coming to us at such a late date?
Communications and getting back. It was just I think this should be the final one.
This should be the final one. Okay. All right. That was my next question. How many more of these are coming forward?
No, this should be the final one.
Okay. All right.
We're doing some final permission to construct right now because we had some issues with the construction, and we're getting some permission to construct, but those don't have to come to the commission.
Okay, Kim, thank you. Any questions by members of the commission? Any questions or comments by members of the audience on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the commission. Would someone care to make a motion? As you know, you can just say, you know, move to approve as published if you want to. But if you go ahead, Jim, certainly.
Madam Chair, I move to approve and authorize the Chair to sign an agreement between Adhaven Investments, LLC, a Nevada Limited Liability Company, and Carson City, whereby Adhaven Investments, LLC, a Nevada Limited Liability Company, agrees to sell and convey a portion of certain real property described as Assessor's Parcel Number 002, 2017-121-08, grant permission to construct upon, over, and across certain real property described as assessor's parcel 002-121-08, and convey a permanent utility easement upon, over, and across the same certain real property for the purpose of roadway construction related to the Roop Street widening project with a total cost of $4,200.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Moving on to the next item, which is item F2. Who's going to handle this?
Item F2 is the approval of a contract to DKS and Associates to provide Campo Travelman modeling update to us. I will note first that there is an errata sheet that was distributed. If anybody doesn't have one, Dan's got more. There were only two relatively minor changes for item F2 that are noted there. And I'll just, the highlights of this contract are that we're using DKS. Again, that has served us well in the past for our travel and modeling needs. This update will be used for us in the update of the regional transportation plan, and will include the expansion of the area into Lyon County for the area that is out to Dayton that's now a portion of the metropolitan planning area. We will have new planning horizon dates, a medium term 2020 and a longer term 2035. Both those dates will be added. We will have we will include new data, including demographic data, land use data. Very importantly, we'll have new data regarding the physical transportation infrastructure, because we've changed a lot of roads in the last few years. And additionally, a significant component of this is the collection of peak period turning movement counts at all signalized intersections in Carson City and extending in the Campbell area into Lyon and Douglas counties, that will be used not only by this consultant but also for the effort in item F3 for the optimization of traffic signals. So we're getting data that will be used for two different studies, which is also very helpful. But I will say that while this is a an important part of the regional transportation plan, this is only the modeling tool as part of that, and staff will be actually utilizing this as part of the regional transportation plan update that is part of the CAMPO work program. Excuse me. And that's it.
And Patrick, our perennial question is, being mindful of budgets, I know this is not suitable for bidding, but based on your experience, your past experience, are these charges in line with what other similar companies are charging for these services?
Yes, indeed. These are, we're very happy to be for getting these services for what is being offered to us. This is the first time we've done a contract of like this in several years. 3 years ago, we did an actual update of the model that included new software. And indeed, they were very open and forthright as far as their selection and costing of a subcontractor to do the data collection as well. So we've even seen those numbers.
Okay. I had just one question. I understand the change in the self-insured retention per occurrence. I don't understand why we would delete the wording in 13.5.6, which basically says that the policy should not be canceled, non-renewed, or coverage and or limits reduced or materially altered without noticing Carson City. Why would we agree to that amendment? And what is their objection to that, the inclusion of that language? I mean, that's pretty standard language. Joel?
It's actually the change that gets made in not insignificant percentage. It's because some insurance companies don't necessarily kick out those notices to the secondary insureds. So it's not a change that hasn't normally changed. We'll still get noticed if they are non-renewed or it's canceled, which basically would affect the coverage. We just didn't think it was a significant risk.
Even if the limits are substantially reduced? And no longer compliant.
Just for the type of work that was being done, it wasn't considered as
okay, because it's a limited risk.
Yes.
I'm just curious why they would even bother to request that amendment. Commissioner Kroll.
Let me follow up on that. I mean, I may have a concern also with the deductible language. Is this tailored for the format that we're going to use for future contracts, or was it negotiated particularly for this one contract, Joel?
This was negotiated for this particular contract.
Okay. Because I'm inclined to agree with the chair that, you know, when we are an additional insured, that, you know, we ought that, I mean, and I understand for this one contract, I mean, it may not be a big deal because of what they're doing, but I think that, you know, if we can avoid making that type of change, it would be helpful. And second, maybe you can help me understand. I mean, my concern with the change in the deductible from $5,000 to $50,000, at first that seems innocuous in a sense. But let me ask you this. Suppose we had to make a claim under the policy and the primary insured declined to make the claim. And we make the claim. Then the city's got to put up the $50,000 for the deductible in order to perfect the claim. Am I missing something there or wrong? As opposed to putting up $5,000 as a deductible. I mean, in other words, if we step in to the shoes of the primary insured, are we going to have to live with that level of deductible? And if so, I think, you know, then we need to understand exactly what we're doing here.
Well, likely we would have to leave with that level of deductible, but that we would also have recourse against the, in this case, the DKS, as if it turned out to be that they were liable for whatever we were making the claim for, they could not just say, well, you're an additional insured. They would still have liability.
Right, right. I got you there, but I mean, you know, in the world, and I don't mean to debate this, but in. You know, what can frequently happen on some of these things is the contractor goes belly up, okay? And so that contractor's not around, and then we're in the shoes. And so maybe you could help me just understand what's the argument made why we should raise the deductible from 5 to 50? Is that the contractor's policy saying that?
Yes, that's what's driving it. Is the contractor's policy? Is their policy? Has a $50,000 deductible as opposed to a $5,000 deductible? And for the most part, it would cost them more to reduce the deductible, which in turn could increase the price of our contract. It's not just a legal decision. We talk to risk management and take a look at each in these type of situations where someone wants to change deductibles or change insurance language to sort of weigh based upon what they're doing. The size and nature of the company we're doing business with to determine whether or not we would agree to either raise deductibles or change notification language.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions or comments by members of the commission? Charles.
This question is for Patrick. I guess I have a concern about traffic data collection. Of course, this is the garbage in, garbage out situation. How much involvement or influence are we going to have where the counters are located, et cetera, where the data is being collected? I guess I have a concern because we need to really be on top of that because otherwise everything from then on is not of the best use that we would like to have it.
This is actually one component of a multi-pronged effort for data collection and modeling, and as I said, item F3 as well. What we're doing is it's not only the location, but also the nature and the timing of the data collection. Yeah, exactly. All the data collection will be occurring end of March, beginning of April, during a three-week period. The straight line counts on the roads are being coordinated with the Nevada Department of Transportation that already has over 100 count stations. We're coordinating with them to make sure that they do their counts, that they claim they can do all their 100-plus counts in a three-week window. The counts that will be done at the intersections as part of this contract are going to be videotape counts that they'll be able to do all 50-plus intersections in a three-day period that will overlap NDOT's period. And coincident with that, the data collection in item F3, or making sure we don't double count, separate type of data collection will also be coincident. And it's all being timed with this because we expect there to be no substantial road projects going on for the first time in years. So with the exception of Clearview Drive, which will be closed for bridge construction.
Maybe
so Hopefully not Hills Bells. So, so hopefully that answers your question. The primary locations are every intersection plus over 100 stations that NDOT counts every single year consistently.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Any other comments? you know, I can understand the argument that changing the deductible when it's not consistent with their existing policy is a legitimate, may be a legitimate request. I am still concerned about deleting what is very standard language, and I'm assuming that by virtue of the fact that they're not amending the limits under Section 14, that they are prepared to comply with our insurance requirements. Therefore, I would be willing to concede on the first change, but frankly not the second change. I think we need to be notified if the coverage is changed during the course of the contract.
If that is the case, what you can do is approve the contract with the one errata, and we will have to take it back to the contractor and negotiate that
point.
So
we're approving it pursuant to their willingness to accept.
Correct. And if they're not, then we may have to bring the contract back again.
Okay. All right.
Can we make that motion?
Certainly.
I guess.
Public comment. Anyone in the public wish to comment on this contract? Dan?
Good evening again. Dan Allison, Carson City, and a muscle-powered member. I wanted to comment that when I read the contract language, which is in the attachments, I didn't see bikes or pedestrians mentioned outright, and I wanted to express that we would feel more comfortable if pedestrians and bicycles were always called out in any travel demand modeling that happens. And I asked Patrick about that, and he confirmed that, yes, there would be a small component of that in the contract and the work to be done. And I'm comfortable with that, and I'm not asking that the contract be modified or not passed. I just a reminder that we'd always feel more comfortable if that were in there. And given that there's land use data going into this, I just wanted to point out that the land use patterns in Carson City have changed significantly, and we would just like to make sure that what's happened in the past isn't simply projected into the future without realizing that things have changed and that, therefore, travel demand will change because land use has changed and the amount and rate of development and the types of development. So we are very pleased that this sort of modeling is going on. I think it benefits all of us to understand what the traffic patterns are and how they can best be managed. So.
Well, and thank you. And forecasting is always kind of an imprecise science. There is a component, obviously, under Task 5, which is to prepare future land use forecasts. So there will be. There's an element of that.
If I may, Lee Plemmel, our planning director, has always, ever since I've been here and probably before then, has always been involved in this and worked with us as well as the representatives of the other two counties of the MPO.
Okay, terrific. Great. Thank you, Dan. Any other public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Mr. Mayor, would you care to make a motion?
Sure. I move to approve contract number 1011-158 pursuant to NRS 332.1151B and NRS 625.530 with DKS Associates to provide a Campo travel demand model update through November 11, 2011, not to exceed cost of $97,900 to be funded from the Campo 245-3028-431-1201. As provided in FY 2010-2011, and subject to the change in the contract, they're subject to keeping in the contract as currently in the draft that's in front of us, the language in section 13.5.6 that includes language that the there'll be a notification to the additional insured in the event of a coverage and or limit reduction or material alteration. So that means that on the errata sheet that was handed out on page 10 of the contract, where the proposal is to delete, quote, or coverage and or limits reduced or materially altered, that errata not be accepted by the commission.
Thank you. All right. Is there a second?
I second.
It's okay. Second with an apology. Okay. And I need to turn off my cell phone as well before it rings. Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Thank you. Moving on to the next item, item F3. Patrick?
I already referenced this one in the previous item. This is a
a contract to do traffic signal optimization for the Campo area. It actually extends into Douglas and Lyon counties as needed. We're very pleased to be able to bring this forward using the federal funds available to us. And I'll just note that this once again has been coordinated with the previous agenda item as well as the as well as NDOT efforts, and will allow us to take into account the shifts in traffic that have been happening over the last several years as we've made improvements and you know the freeway opening and the like and under section of that, and also some behind the scenes improvements to the traffic signal communications and controlling systems that allow us to even be able to do this type of study. And with that, I'll just note that once again, that same errata sheet contains several proposed adjustments to the contract before you.
And Patrick, would you like to, we were diligently reading the suggested changes. I see they caught the date in on page 5. Did you want to elaborate on any of these recommended changes?
I'll just state that I think the first three were real, you know, simple and straightforward. The fourth one listed there, page 16, section 28.1, excuse me, was one of several points that that we let Joel work out with their attorneys.
It had to do with insurance. This is the standard that they're this is their E&O insurance standard, and so they had concerns that their E&O wouldn't cover it under the language that we had in our contract.
Okay, all right. In this case, we have the actual proposed language for section 28. Well, no, that it's changing from general warranty to standard of care. It's replaced with the language that's highlighted. Would you like to read that into the record, Joel?
We're changing Section 28 currently provides that the consultant warrants that all services, deliverables, and or work product under the contract shall be completed in a workmanlike manner consistent with the standards in the trade, profession, or industry, and shall conform to or exceed the specifications that set forth in the incorporated attachments and shall be fit for ordinary use of good quality with no material defects. In this case, PBS&J's, their E&O insurance does not. That's not the language of their standard of care. Their language is that the consultant in performing its work under this contract shall perform its services to the standard of care of a reasonable engineer that is performing the same or similar work at the same time and locality and under the same or similar circumstance faced by the consultant. It's pretty close to being the same standard of care. They just had a concern that if there was an E&O issue and it was under the terms of our contract, they could have a coverage issue. And so they just wanted to replace it with their
term of their coverage.
It's come up once before in a previous contract in the 4 years I've been here, and it's basically the same standard. It just sort of is how their insurance policy is written.
Okay, all right. Any concerns or comments by members of the commission on these recommended changes? I had one additional change, actually, on page 1 under contract term. We need to insert the language. Let's see, maybe it's already been done. Let's see, no. This contract shall be effective from November 10th of 2010, which is the date of this meeting, subject to the RTC's approval. So if we could add that to our list of changes.
Sure, that actually was done by Sandy Scott Fisher.
Oh, it has been done, okay. Because
and given to me
okay,
subsequent
terrific.
To
all right,
your
okay.
Package.
So based on your confirmation that the document has been changed accordingly, then we'll just focus on approving this item subject to the changes that are in the errata sheet before us. Okay, any...
Can I have just one?
Certainly. Go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
After 5 o'clock, and lawyers can always find things. Let me just ask you this. If what we're doing here is changing the language, I mean, again, I look at this in terms of, I understand, you know, that an EO policy may have specific language in it. But the original contract in the form contract we usually enter into contains a warranty. And the language that we're proposing here pretty well says no warranty. It says you're going to live to a standard of care, but it doesn't warrant that. I mean, I guess, and I'm trying to think of if that's a substantive change, Joel, or not.
If they were providing a deliverable or materials, I would say that would definitely provide a be a substantive change, but in the case they're providing engineering services, and it's not even necessarily hard engineering services, they're not designing a building for us. It's a traffic optimization signal study. So they're not designing a building. We're not running the risk that the building's going to fall down. So if they don't live up to the standard of care, we can still have an option to go after them under the E&O insurance for negligent standard of care. There's just not a hard deliverable to warrant.
Okay. Well, I can go along. I'll go along with it here. I mean, I just don't want us to overlook. I mean, on sometimes, you know, lawyers can fly spec these things pretty hard, and I understand what's going on there. But when it comes to protecting our interests, you know, feel free to push back.
We debated this a long time, and I was willing. We ended up debating this, and they conceded on several issues that I thought were more important to us. And
okay, well, that's right. I mean, we're not privy to the dynamics of the negotiations. So, Mr. Mayor, are you reasonably comfortable with the changes? Okay. Open this up to public comment. Any member of the public wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Would somebody care to make a motion? Again, subject to the changes contained in the rider sheet before us.
Madam Chair, I move to approve that contract 1011-159 pursuant to NRS 332.1151B and NRS 625.530 with PBS&J to provide a traffic signal optimization program through November 11, 2011. For a not-to-exceed cost of $124,480 to be funded from the CAMPO 245-3028-431-12-01 as provided in fiscal year 2010-2011, in addition with the number of errata sheet or errata changes that have been provided to the RTC Commission. Also, the fiscal impact is $124,480.
Thank you. Any comments on the question? And I have one quick inquiry. Even though there's no specific reference in the scope of work to actual intersections and corridors that will be studied, can you give us a highlight? I hope Stewart is one of them, Stewart Street.
Well, yeah, absolutely. We will be, as I said, collecting data on every single intersection. And we will be looking at just about everything to one degree or another. But if you know, the highlights, of course, will be the primary corridors. And I will actually mention that and give credit right now to the University of Nevada, Reno. Dr. Zong Tian is actually working with our staff right now free of charge, providing some traffic signal coordination in the interim, which is very much appreciated. And he's made some significant improvements. And they've already worked on Carson and Fairview, and I believe they've started Stewart, and next is US 50. So we are getting some interim improvements that will make it easier for this contractor to have something even better to work with when they get here. So yes, it will be the major corridors, but for example, we also have an agreement with Douglas County to coordinate signals on the south end of US 395. That entire corridor will be coordinated as well. Which will also be different because traffic levels have changed, and now there's a third northbound lane, which is changing the dynamic on 395 as well. So it will be system-wide, though.
I mean, and I don't know if we're picking up any additional signalized intersections in Lyon County as a result of expanding the CAMPO boundaries. But
I don't know either, but we are making sure that we collect data all the way out there because, as you know, NDOT does have a pending project in there that may be several years away, but we are collecting data there, and actually we are also collecting data several intersections that are not signalized now, but we believed it prudent to get the data just in case.
Okay. All right. Terrific. Thank you very much for that clarification. If there are no further questions or comments, all those in favor?
We have a second.
We do, I think. Don't we? Didn't you second?
No.
Charles?
I gave the motion.
I second the motion.
You second the motion. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for keeping me on track.
Can't do both.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. So moved. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, which is F4.
This is an informational item to inform you that not only is the Eagle Station signal project now officially complete because we got the final micropaving done, we have invoiced both Carson Gaming LLC and the Redevelopment Authority per the agreement that was signed in October 2008. The total invoice to the Redevelopment Authority is $225,634.61. And what we're informing you about is that the Redevelopment Authority has requested a payment plan with the payments to be spread out over over five payments. The first one will be made. Talked to the finance director today. He indicated next month. So it's basically going to be five annual payments of just over $45,000 a year until the invoice is paid in full.
Okay, so this is informational only, so the payment of this obligation in installments doesn't require a formal vote by RTC? Okay.
All right. Correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, I know that redevelopments till is substantially diminished, so I think there's probably justification for this. Any questions or comments by members of the commission? Any questions or comments by members of the audience? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item. Item F5, information on the disposition of buses. Patrick.
We're putting this out as an informational item, not only for the RTC members, but also for the general public, because we recently acquired five buses. We also recently disposed of four buses. And once the Roop Street project is open and we don't need those little green buses to navigate through traffic control, we will be free to dispose of two additional buses. We intend to do it in the same manner as the last four. If you recall, we had at that time three that we saw fit that were able to be donated to governmental and nonprofit organizations, and one that was in such a poor condition that we surplused it and will go to auction. So we have two more buses to go, and once we dispose of these two buses, we will still have the five larger purple buses for fixed route. We will have six smaller green buses for paratransit service and one van. And we will be working with the contract staff to provide additional notice to eligible agencies that these vehicles will be made available, and the formal approval from the Federal Transit Administration of our ability to take this action, just like last time, is pending.
Patrick, on the list of eligible agencies, would that include WNC?
I will confirm that it includes WNC. Okay. It's Sandy Scott Fisher indicated it was governmental and nonprofit organizations, so I'll confirm.
Well, you know, and I caution them that most of these buses are pretty well used, but they do obviously have the ability to repair vehicles on campus, so if you would add them to the list of possible recipients, that would be great. It was brought up in a recent foundation meeting by one of the foundation trustees. So, okay. All right. Thank you. Any other comments or questions by members of the commission? All right. We'll move on to item F6, which has been deleted, postponed until next month. Hopefully, we'll have a report. And just for the information of the public, that had to do with the information and rationale regarding the use of consulting firms to provide construction management services on city projects. All right, moving on to item F7, action to reconsider a previous RTC action. Jeff? Joel?
Yes, I've been volunteered to present this item. Last month, the RTC approved a final payment for the ARA micropaving project with Valley Slurry Seal. In that final payment, there was a deduction of about 20% for liquidated damages. Valley Slurry Seal has contacted us, and a copy of the letter was provided to you, disputing sort of the process, but as well the deduction of liquidated damages. In this case, I would recommend that we bring the action back to the staff level to sort of rescind the final payment, bring it back to staff level, and let staff, under the terms of the contract, resolve the dispute before finalizing the contract.
Okay. But the action before us is not to rescind, it's to reconsider.
Right, to reconsider. So the first step of the process is you approved it, so you have to reconsider your approval. And then once you reconsider the approval, then it's on the table to rescind or approve again.
Or not. Okay. All right. Any questions by members of the commission? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Any questions from members of the public or any comments by members of the public? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission. Commissioner Mallory.
Madam Chair, I do have a question for Joel. On the letter that Ryan C. Wood prepared, the second paragraph, this letter is to you, dated November 2nd.
It's contained in our packet, Joel.
It's in the packet. It says this letter will also confirm that VSS waives the notice requirements under Nevada's open meeting law so that the matter above can maybe properly placed on the RTC agenda under the present time constraints. What does that mean?
If you're going to discuss a person, and in this case, and in Nevada, person is defined to include a business entity or a corporation, if you're going to discuss their competency or something like that, you're supposed to provide them notice that they're going to be discussed at a meeting. There's been some discussion with the Valley of Slurry Seal is their concern is they were not properly noticed that you were going to do a final payment on their thing. So they're sort of confirming their right to notice by saying that we're waiving the notice for this meeting here. So we did, under the NRS, you're supposed to either provide personal notice within 5 days or 21 days by certified mail if you're going to discuss someone at a meeting. And so there is part of their sort of claim that we violated the open meeting law in the final improvement last month. They're waiving the notice requirements for this meeting today.
How are they not properly noticed for the October meeting?
Well, they're alleging that they were not given the notice required under the open meeting law for discussion of their contract at the October meeting. I disagree, and sort of the rationale behind bringing this back is not, I mean, the original letter is 5 pages or 4 pages discussing the open meeting law and how it applies to them. Ryan and I agree to disagree on whether or not and how the open meeting law applied and whether or not they received notice. But it did bring up the issue of the dispute of the liquidated damages, which is why it's being brought to you today, to bring that back to staff to deal with that substantive problem as opposed to the process of noticing under the open meeting law.
So basically, the provisional letter only provides us with the ability to act this evening because it's in everyone's best interest to reconsider, rescind, and then refer back to staff so we can hopefully resolve this issue. Commissioner Desjardins.
Not being a lawyer, is this gentleman licensed to practice in Nevada, or does he need to be?
I would have to look in, and I don't know the particular. He's practicing in the state of California. He's a California licensed attorney. I don't know if he's licensed in Nevada, but he's representing a California company, and he's in California. The nuances of when you're required to have a license are not as bright line as you would think they are.
Well, yeah, we don't want to get hung up on process either at this point. We want to get this issue resolved. So if there are not any further questions or comments, would somebody care to make a motion?
I move to reconsider the previous RTC action taken on October 13th, 2010 to approve release of final payment for contract number 0910-128, Title 2010 ARRA Micropaving Project to Valley Slurry Seal Company.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is there a second?
Second.
Let the record, is there any comment from members of the public? Is there anybody here representing either Mr. Ryan Wood's firm of Downey Brand or anyone representing Valley Slurry Seal Company who would like to make a comment? Yes, please come forward if you care to testify.
My name is Tim Schmidt. I represent Valley Slurry Seal. I don't have any further comments on it, other than to support the two items up for approval.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. All right. Any other public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Bring this back to the commission. Would somebody, we have a motion on the table. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. All right. We'll move on to the next item, which is a companion item, item F8. Joel?
Madam Chair, did we have
yes.
a second on that?
We did. We were on a question.
Okay.
Joel.
Yes, item F8, now that the commission has decided to reconsider their previous action on the approval of the final payment, staff is recommending that we rescind the final approval and refer the issue back to staff to deal with the issue of the disputed liquidated damages under the Valley Slurry Seal contract.
Okay. Mayor Kroll.
If I make a motion to do this, or if I vote on a motion to do this, I want it to be clear that the fact that we make the motion and are reconsidering it is not an admission of an error on behalf of either the commission or its staff in how it analyzed whether or not
liquidated damage clause should be implemented or not. Okay?
Absolutely. This recommendation is not that there is a dispute. There is a dispute whether or not liquidated damages. Staff has not changed its position on whether or not we believe liquidated damages apply. This is about following the process under the contract to use basically alternative dispute resolution to resolve disputes. We're required in the contract first to go to mediation and then to arbitration should a dispute arise under a public works contract. So this is sort of the process of unfinalizing the contract from our end so that we can follow the contract requirements, because there is a dispute, not that staff believes that liquidated damages don't apply, but so that we can resolve the dispute under the contract.
I got you, and I don't want to step in the middle of where you are here, but it seems to me that I understand the issue of mediation, but does the contract require mediation before we make a decision? Or, I mean, it seems to me to be a little bit premature to mediate unless you know what our decision it was.
We're
a public body. I got to tell you, hey, listen, I think that it was that, you know, there was whatever wrong with the product that was delivered, however, and then, which is what we did, and then the mediation starts after that. But what I'm hearing you right now is you want us to rescind, talk about whether or not it should be even be mediated, and see if you can work it out.
Correct.
Okay.
So following that line, Joel, if we move this evening to rescind our previous action and refer the matter back to staff, then there would be some preliminary discussions between the parties. If they couldn't come to a satisfactory resolution, would this board then be requested to take action which would trigger the requirement for mediation?
Likely at that time, if it could not get resolved before the mediation, we would have a meeting between the board and legal staff to discuss options and sort of the procedures to be followed.
Okay. All right. Terrific. All right. Okay. Commissioner Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Joel, how long do you think that would take?
At this time, I don't have an estimate as to how long it could take. The issue has been brought up to Valley Slurry Seal in the past. That we felt that their specs, for the reason that we took the liquidated damages, and there was not, from staff's perspective, information provided that showed a true dispute over the issue. So I honestly don't have an estimate. It's going to depend on how long it takes staff and Valley Slurry Seal to get together and discuss the matter.
Okay. Any further questions? Seeing none, would somebody care to make a motion?
I'll make it.
Thank you.
Without an admission of any kind, I move to rescind approval of the release of final payment for contract number 0910-128, titled 2010 RR Micropaving Project of Valley Slurry Seal Company. Refer the issue back to staff.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments on the question? Any further public comment? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Thank you. Moving on to item G1, which is informational only, a monthly status report on street operations. Any questions regarding any of the information contained in our packet? Any questions from members of the public? All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to item G2, also informational only, which is our project status update. Any questions regarding the project status update? Jeff is with us, even though Darren is not, so hopefully you have any questions. Jeff can answer them. Any questions? Any questions from members of the public? Jeff, did you want to make a comment or just respond to questions? Okay. Yes, Mr. Mayor.
I don't know if this is an update or not, but is the road, the water leak at Arrowhead and Gonai fixed now? Am I on the right agenda item or not? I don't know.
Jeff Sharp, city engineer. It's my understanding that it is fixed. At least the leak is stopped. There needs to be some further work out there. Some replumbing, if you will, to make sure that this situation doesn't happen again. So it is temporarily fixed, but their public works will be out there again and in the coming weeks or months to take care of the situation more permanently and then get things patched up.
So that was the night work taking place yesterday?
Yeah, they did get the leak stopped, though. So.
Okay, all right. Any other questions, Bob? Okay. Jeff, thank you very much for the update. All right, we come to the end of our agenda. Future agenda items. Patrick.
As well, we may have the
the decision on the disposition of those vehicles previously referenced. We'll bring back the item regarding the use of consultants for construction management. And unfortunately, after the approval by this body of the contract with the Nevada Appeal to do advertising sales, we'll just call it a glitch in the contract was found. We are working that out right now. So we're going to have to bring that back to you for reapproval. And I will tell you that I did personally call Commissioner Carpenter and inform him of what was going on, so you wouldn't be surprised.
Patrick, one additional item in light of the testimony under public comment. Could you just report, it can be an informational item only, on the status of our protocols with respect to changes to our transit service, how it was handled, the most recent changes, who was notified, you know, what sort of efforts were undertaken to inform the public of the changes so that we have that information on the record? Okay.
No problem.
Thank you. All right, yes, Mr. Sharp.
Along those lines, there was a public comment about the bike lane striping on Roop Street. This is project related. There was an error in the engineering plans. A very short section out in front of this building, just south of the bike lane, it's for southbound traffic. The stripers laid it out per the plans, and it ended up not giving enough width on the bike lane on the west side of the road. So we're aware of that. The solution would be just to grind off the stripe and then restripe it out there. I don't think it's more than 50 feet of stripe out there, and I think it's less than that anyways, that it has to come out. So it's a minor issue, but I'm glad that it was brought up, and it is something that we're aware of, and we'll take care of that. So.
Okay. Well, the contractor take care of that, Jeff? I presume
no,
you will.
No, the engineer's going to take care of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it was built to spec?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. The other question regarding that section of Fifth Street, Dan Allison alluded to the fact that there was a micro-paving took place on that section, and apparently, at least according to him, it wasn't done in a quality manner. Is that something we can pursue with NDOT?
Yeah, they did it the first time last year, and mm-hmm. I was the one that actually contacted them to inform them that they needed to make repairs because we obviously didn't want to receive in that condition.
Right.
They actually were very receptive. They had the contractor come out and attempt to make repairs, but apparently those haven't been sufficient either. So I guess we'll have to look at it again with MDOT staff and potentially the contractor.
Okay. That's right. All right. Thank you. Thanks, Jeff.
And all that's being done under the general warranty or the standard of care clause?
that's the general warranty. That's a deliverable. Okay. All right. Well said, Mr. Mayor. All right. With that, we're at the end of the agenda. Would somebody care to make a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second? All those in favor? Any opposed? Thank you, everyone.